The kid came awake suddenly, and when he did, he had no idea how long he had been asleep. His dreams had been full of blood and death, of the anguished face of his wife and the leering, evil faces of the men who had kidnapped and killed her. The violent images of the deaths he had meted out to them in turn gave him no satisfaction. Blood paid for blood, but it never quite fulfilled the debt. As the kid sat up in bed, he supposed that those all too vivid dreams had jolted him out of slumber. Then he realized that somewhere outside, the roar of gunshots filled the air. As the kid sprang out of bed, the Colt seemed to leap from his holster to his hand as if by magic. He pushed the curtains aside at one of the windows and saw that the shadows were gathering over the ranch headquarters. The sun was down and twilight was settling in. It was one of the worst times of the day to try to see anything. The kid spotted a couple of dark shapes lying huddled and motionless on the ground and recognized them as men who were either wounded or dead. Shots came from the barn, the bunkhouse, and the house below him. The gunfire was directed at a stand of aspen trees about 100 yards from the house. The kid saw muzzle flashes stabbing through the darkness out there. The bushwhackers must have slipped into the trees, then waited until dusk and opened fire on the ranch hands as they moved around on their final chores of the day. The Diamondback punchers would have scurried for cover, some of them reaching the barn, others the bunkhouse, maybe a few running into the main house. The hidden riflemen continued pouring lead at the place, keeping the defenders pinned down. It was impossible to know for sure how many bushwhackers were out there. The kid estimated at least a dozen, judging by the muzzle flashes. Enough to do some damage, there was no doubt about that. He couldn't shake the thought that Diana Starbird and her uncle were likely somewhere in the house where a stray bullet could shatter a window or punch through a wall and find them. He grimaced as his hand tightened on the Colt's grips. At that range, the six gun wouldn't do him much good. He might be able to send his shots in a high enough arc that they would reach the trees, but there was no hope of any accuracy doing that. What he needed were his sharps and his Winchester. Moving quickly, he holstered the revolver and buckled the gun belt around his hips. He stomped his feet into his boots and pulled on his shirt. Leaving his hat where he'd hung it on the back of a chair, he left the room. The house was in darkness. Either the lamps hadn't been lit yet, or someone had blown them all out. That was good. No sense giving the bushwhackers any better targets than they already had. The kid went down the stairs to the big living room where he had talked with Diana and Captain Starbird earlier.
Son of... I almost shot you, kid!
His eyes were adjusted enough to the dimness for him to be able to make out the rifle Diana clutched in her hands.
I'm glad you didn't. What's going on?
What does it sound like? We're under attack!
Malone and his men?
Bound to be. I guess he didn't figure you'd be here, so his word that he wouldn't try to kill you doesn't apply.
Where's your uncle?
In his study. There are heavy shutters over the windows. He's safe.
And I'll bet it's killing him to have to stay out of the fight, too.
That's right. I didn't give him any choice, though. As soon as the shooting started, I pushed his chair in there and locked the door.
The kid would have bet a hat that Diana was going to get a blistering earful from her uncle for doing that once the fight was over. Assuming, of course, they both lived through it.
You can get in there with him if you want.
Why would I do that?
You made it clear that our trouble with Malone isn't your fight.
I said I wasn't a hired gun. There's a difference. I'm going to make a run for the barn. I need my sharps and my Winchester.
You're loco! You can't get to the barn. Those bastards will shoot you full of holes if you try.
I don't like being shot at. It tends to make me want to shoot back.
Well, you don't have to go to the barn to do it. Your rifles are right over there on the table. One of the boys brought your gear in from the barn a little while ago, but I thought you might be asleep, so I told him just to leave it all down here for now.
That was a lucky break, the kid thought. He hurried over to the table and saw his sharps and Winchester lying there. His saddlebags were draped over the back of a chair. He draped the saddlebags over his shoulder.
Where are you going?
The high ground. The windows in my room have a good view of those trees.
When Morgan reached his room, he tossed the saddlebags on the bed, then went to one of the windows, thrusting the curtains all the way aside and opening it. Kneeling, he set the Winchester on the floor beside him and brought the heavy sharps to his shoulder. His thumb eased back the hammer, and he nestled his cheek against the smooth wood of the stock as he peered over the barrel at the trees where the bushwhackers had set up shop. The kid didn't have to wait for very long, only a couple of heartbeats, before he saw a muzzle flash at just about the spot where he had the sharps pointed. He shifted his aim just slightly and squeezed the trigger. He set the sharps aside and snatched up the Winchester. He began firing, targeting the muzzle flashes he saw in the shadows under the trees. The kid's swift, deadly accurate fire from the second-story window soon drew the attention of the bushwhacker. There was another window in the room, and he rolled across the floor, avoiding the broken glass, and came up on one knee at that one. Gun flashes still winked like fireflies under the trees, but there were fewer of them. He had a hunch some of his shots had found their targets. He lined his sights and started firing again, emptying the Winchester in a long burst of well-placed shots. There was no return barrage. The trees went dark as the bushwhackers stopped shooting. The kid leaned closer to the window and listened as intently as he could. The sound of rapid hoofbeats came to his ears.
I think they're lighting a shuck, Miss Diana.
Everyone, hold your position. It could be a trick.
The kid was glad that she had some sense of strategy. It would help keep her from making any foolish mistakes. He left the Sharps in the room, but took the Winchester with him as he went downstairs. Diana was waiting in the living room, along with a couple of ranch hands who had come in there from other parts of the house.
Do you think they're really gone?
I don't know. It sounded like they were pulling out, but like you said, it could be a trick.
If it is, we'll wait them out.
The kid glanced at the window. Outside, the sky was almost completely dark. The stars would be putting in an appearance soon, if they weren't already. That darkness could come in handy.
I'll go scout around and make sure they're gone.
You can't do that. It's too dangerous.
I'll be all right. I know how to move without being seen and take care of myself if I run into any trouble. I had a good teacher.
All right. But be careful. Do you want some of the men to go with you?
No. I'll handle the chore by myself.
He went to the back of the house, slipped out the rear door, and cat-footed his way around the structure. As he worked his way around the bunkhouse and the barn toward the trees, he told himself to be especially cautious about not being seen. Some of the Diamondback hands might mistake him for one of the bushwhackers. Unfortunately, it was a risk he had to take. He made it to the trees without incident and stopped in the thick shadows underneath them. His keen ears strained to hear any sound. For a good 5 minutes, the kid stood absolutely silent and motionless, barely breathing as he used his other senses in addition to his hearing. He peered through the shadows, alert for even the slightest movement, and he smelled the thinning clouds of powder smoke that lingered in the air and gradually faded. When he was convinced that the bushwhackers were actually gone, he stepped to the edge of the trees.
Hello, inside the house!
Mr. Morgan, are you all right?
They're gone! I'm coming out, hold your fire!
Hold your fire, it's Mr. Morgan!
The kid walked out of the trees into the open, carrying the Winchester at his side. He noted that the dead or wounded cowboys he had seen lying on the ground earlier were gone, and supposed that their friends had risked emerging from cover to pick them up. He headed for the house, and by the time he got there and went up the steps, Diana was waiting on the porch with Sam Rockland and some of the other men.
Bushwhackers are gone. Somebody will fetch a lantern, we can search the trees and see if they left any dead or wounded behind. I'd be willing to bet they didn't, though.
Probably not. Malone wouldn't want to leave anybody behind who could testify against him. Sam, can you handle that?
I sure can.
Rockland turned to the other punchers.
Ori, fetch a lantern from the bunkhouse. Lon, you and Gordon come along too.
The kid started to turn around and accompany them, but Diana stopped him with a hand on his arm.
I wish you'd come with me, kid.
To do what?
I have to let Uncle Owen out of the study, and I don't particularly want to be alone when I do it.
The kid didn't really blame her for feeling that way. He knew that Owen Starbird would probably be furious at being shunted aside like that when danger threatened. Diana led the way inside.
Do you think it's safe to light the lamps now?
I think so.
Diana struck a match against the stone hearth of the fireplace. She held the match to the wick of a lamp that sat on the mantel, then lowered the chimney as it caught. Yellow, slightly flickering light spread out through the room. Diana lit a lamp that she took from one of the tables as well, then carried it with her as she opened a door that led to a hallway running toward the western end of the house.
Uncle Owen's study is down here.
As she approached a heavy door, she used her free hand to reach in a pocket on her riding skirt and pull out a key. It rattled in the lock as she thrust it in and turned it. Leaving the key in the lock, she pulled the door open.
It's bloody well about time! I've been sitting here in the dark listening to those shots, not knowing if you were alive or dead, dammit! What happened?
Malone attacked the ranch. His men opened fire on the crew just as they were finishing the last of the day's work and coming in for supper. The men scattered and hunted cover, but a couple of them were wounded.
Who?
Deuce Robinson and Jim Woodley.
How badly are they hurt?
I don't know. The men carried him into the bunkhouse. I sent Carmelita out there to take a look at him. We may have to send to Bristol for the doctor, though.
Was anyone else injured?
Couple of bullet burns, that's all.
Where are the bushwhackers now?
They took off for the tall and uncut. I'd say Mr. Morgan tipped the odds in our favor when he opened fire on them from the second floor.
I see. Thank you, sir. I greatly appreciate your assistance in this matter.
They were shooting at me, too.
And I suppose that makes it your fight.
Damn right it does.
So the bushwhackers are gone. The wounded are being tended to. And the situation is under control.
That's right.
The kid wasn't surprised by what happened next. He could tell that Starbird had been holding in his anger until he found out exactly what had happened and what was going on.
By the Lord Harry, girl, if you ever shove me in a room and lock the door as soon as trouble starts again, I'll see to it that you rue that day for the rest of your life.
I was trying to keep you from getting shot, damn it.
I never hid from danger a single time in a long, perilous career. I always did my duty.
And what could you have done tonight? In your condition, you can't...
She stopped as her uncle's face turned white. The kid had a feeling that Diana's words had just done more damage to Owen Starbird than a bullet could have.
You're right. I'm useless since my legs don't work anymore, aren't I?
That's not what I mean, Uncle Owen, and you know it.
That's exactly what you meant. A man who can't walk isn't any good for anything. That's what you think. But you could have pushed me up to a window and given me a rifle. I can still shoot. My arms and my eyes work just fine.
I thought of that, but you couldn't get out of the line of fire quickly enough if you needed to. It wasn't really a matter of what you can do, Uncle Owen. I just didn't want you to get hurt.
Tell Rocklin that I want him to take some of the men and trail those bushwhackers in the morning.
What good will that do? We know Malone sent them.
Yes, but if the trail leads back to the Trident, then we'll have proof we can turn over to the law.
What law? Deputy Collier isn't going to try to arrest Malone by himself. And the Rangers don't care, or they would have shown up in the valley by now. We have to handle this trouble ourselves.
Tell Rocklin what I said anyway. I like to know where I stand before I act.
Of course. I don't think it's going to do any good, though.
I want to know how those wounded men are doing. I'll get my crutches.
That's not necessary. I'll go out to the bunkhouse and check on them.
I'd rather see for myself.
Fine. Be stubborn if you want. I can't stop you.
You most certainly can't. If I could prevail on you to give me a hand, Morgan?
The kid stepped behind the wheelchair and gripped its handles.
All right, Captain.
Diana glared at him. He ignored the look and pushed Starbird along the hall to the living room. Starbird's crutches leaned there against the wall. The kid got them and brought them over, then helped Starbird stand up and get the crutches under his arms. Diana followed them into the room and stood with her arms crossed and a look of disapproval on her face. The kid glanced at her, then helped Starbird out the door and onto the porch. Getting down the steps wasn't easy, but with one of the kid's hands on his arm to steady him, the retired naval officer managed. The two of them crossed the large open space between the main house and the bunkhouse.
I know it's none of my business, Captain, but...
How did I lose the use of my legs? You're right. It's none of your business, old boy. I don't blame you for being curious, though. You realize that a man couldn't captain one of Her Majesty's warships without being able to walk.
Yes, that's the thought that crossed my mind.
I began having trouble about 3 years ago. The doctors in England believed it was some sort of progressive nerve disorder. And they were right in that the condition steadily grew worse. That's why I had to retire from the Royal Navy, although I would have reached that age in a few more years anyway. My brother invited me to come here, to his Raj, rather than settling in England, and I accepted. To be honest, I spent so much time away from England over the years that I couldn't see returning there for good. Didn't really feel like home to me anymore. By the time I arrived in Texas and found that my brother was dead, I had to use two canes to get around, and my condition continued to worsen until my legs were no good to me at all. The muscles have wasted away since then. Carmelita tries to keep some life in them by massaging them every day. But it's a losing battle, I'm afraid.
I'm sorry to hear that. I appreciate you being honest with me. If I'm going to be in a fight, I like to know who my allies are.
You sound as if you've reconsidered your earlier decision. Are you willing to work for us after all?
No, I'm still not looking for a job. I won't take your wages. But I didn't like Malone to start with, and after what happened tonight, I like him even less. Getting shot at makes it personal.
Indeed. It's difficult to get much more personal than someone trying to kill you.
They reached the bunkhouse. Sam Rocklin stepped out to greet them. Light from inside the building spilled through the open door.
Captain, what can I do for you?
I came to check on the condition of the two lads who were wounded.
Jim Woodley's dead. He lost too much blood. There was nothing Carmelita could do for him. Deuce is in pretty bad shape, but at least he's hanging on for now.
Would it help to fetch the doctor from Bristol? Or should we take young Robinson into town?
I wouldn't move him. The buckboard ride would finish him off, sure as shooting. His best chance would be for somebody to bring the sawbones out here.
Then send a rider now. A man can reach the settlement by morning and have the doctor here before the day is over tomorrow.
Yes, sir. I'll send Ori. He's a good rider and has a fast horse.
I already spoke to my niece about this, but since I'm out here, I might as well tell you myself. In the morning, I want you to take some men and trail those scoundrels who attacked the ranch. I want to know where they came from.
I'm begging your pardon, Cap'n, but we know where they came from. Malone spread.
We don't know that for a fact. I want confirmation.
Well, you're the boss. When those varmints lit a shuck out here, they were moving pretty fast, so they weren't trying to cover their tracks. I bet they slowed down, though, after they put some ground behind them and took care to make their trail harder to follow.
Let's find out one way or the other, shall we?
Rocklin inclined his head toward the interior of the bunkhouse.
You want to see Deuce?
Is he awake?
Off and on.
Very well. Perhaps a word from me will lift the young man's spirits.
That's what I was thinking.
Rocklin moved aside. Starbird entered into the bunkhouse on his crutches, followed by the kid. Rocklin led them to one of the bunks, where Carmelita sat on a stool next to the bed and used a wet rag to wipe the forehead of the wounded man. That was probably all she could do for him. Bloody bandages were wrapped around the young cowboy's torso. At least the crimson stains didn't seem to be spreading, the kid noted. Maybe the bleeding had stopped, which would be a good sign. Deuce's eyes flickered open and looked up.
Cap'n, is that you?
It is indeed, lad. I see that you've been wounded.
Oh, it ain't nothing. Cap'n, I'll be back on my feet in no time. Fighting Black Terrence and his blasted skunks.
I'm certain you will be. In the meantime, we'll give you the best possible care. Try to rest, and don't trouble your mind about anything.
I'll try. Cap'n.
I say, is he...
He sleeps. That is all, Capitan.
Very well. Do everything you can for him.
Si, Capitan.
Sam, don't forget what I told you about tomorrow morning.
Yes, sir. We'll get on the trail at first light.
I'm going with you.
I reckon that's up to the captain.
Mr. Morgan was of invaluable assistance tonight. I see no harm in him accompanying you, Sam.
Sure, boss. Whatever you say. Earlier, though, before all the shooting broke out, I was talking to some of the boys. They've heard of this fella. Seems he's getting quite a rep as a gunfighter.
Then it sounds as if Mr. Morgan is exactly the sort of chap we need on our side, doesn't it?
By the time the kid and Captain Starbird got back to the main house, Diana had rustled up some supper, since Carmelita was busy in the bunkhouse taking care of the wounded Deuce Robinson. It was a simple meal, leftover beef, beans, and tortillas, but it tasted good to the kid, especially when it was washed down with strong coffee. After supper, Starbird asked the kid to help him get ready for bed, another chore Carmelita usually handled. Diana offered to help, but Starbird shook his head firmly.
Wouldn't be proper, don't you know? Dashed improper, in fact.
I don't mind.
The kid assisted Starbird to the captain's bedroom, which was on the first floor for the sake of convenience, across the hall from his study. Once there, the kid helped with the necessary tasks, carrying them out with no fuss or extra delay. He knew it had to be galling to a man as proud as Owen Starbird to need a helping hand with such basic, private matters.
Thank you, old boy. I believe we're fortunate that my niece happened to run into you. You strike me as a man with a kind heart.
I haven't been accused of that too often. I'm a gunfighter, remember?
That doesn't mean you can't be a decent individual as well.
Most folks would disagree with you about that.
The kid lifted a hand in farewell as he went out of the room. Back in the living room, Diana still sat at the table, sipping from her coffee cup.
There's brandy if you'd like some.
That's a mighty tempting offer.
She nodded toward the sideboard.
Help yourself.
The kid went over and poured brandy from a crystal decanter into a glass.
How about you?
She smiled and held up her cup.
You don't think this is all coffee in here, do you?
He returned the smile and sipped the brandy. It was excellent. Much better than what he expected to find on a cattle ranch in an isolated West Texas valley.
I got your uncle settled in for the night.
Thank you. Sometimes Uncle Owen isn't the easiest person in the world to deal with, but I'm sure he'd say the same thing about me.
I won't pretend to know him very well after just meeting him, but he strikes me as a proud man. It must be difficult for him to accept being crippled.
If he hadn't already been sick when he came here, and if my father was still alive, Malone never would have tried anything. He wouldn't have dared to go up against the Starbird brothers. But my father's gone, and Uncle Owen is just A shadow of the man he used to be. Life just isn't fair.
It never claimed to be fair. I talked to your uncle about what happened to him. The doctors here and over in England weren't able to do anything for him at all?
They just told him he'd have to resign himself to the fact that he'd never walk properly again. By now, of course, his legs have weakened so much that I don't think he'll ever walk again, period. At least, not without his crutches.
That's a terrible thing, but at least he's still alive.
If you can call it living for a man like Uncle Owen, who led such an active existence.
Your uncle already talked to Sam Rocklin about trying to trail those bushwhackers in the morning. We'll be riding out at first light.
You're going with him?
I know a little about tracking.
So you're really in this fight now?
It appears that I am.
Because Malone shot at you.
I don't like to let anybody get away with that.
But after the fight with Wolfram, you were still willing to ride away.
Well, that particular fight was over. It was Malone's idea to start another one.
I'll never understand men. If you and Uncle Owen are prime examples, then you're all stubborn, bullheaded, and impossible to figure out.
Sort of like women.
The kid headed upstairs before Diana could think of anything to say in return. As he climbed the stairs, he couldn't help but wonder if he really was looking for trouble after all, despite telling himself that he wasn't. Otherwise, why did he keep winding up in the middle of it? Carmelita was in the kitchen when the kid came down the next morning before dawn.
How's that young cowboy Deuce?
Carmelita stood at the stove preparing flapjacks. A pot of coffee was brewing and smelled good.
Señor Deuce is alive. That is the best one can say when he was shot like that. Trace bullets. They go right through him.
It's better that the bullets went on through. That way the doctor won't have to dig them out when he gets here.
See, if they did not do too much damage, and if Señor Deuce did not lose too much blood, perhaps he will recover.
She put some of the flapjacks onto a plate, turned and placed it on the table.
Sit. Eat. I will pour coffee.
The kid did as he was told, looking down to hide the quick grin that flashed across his face at Carmelita's no-nonsense tone.
You cook for the hands, too?
No, only for El Capitan and Señorita Diana, and for Señor Rockland when he joins them. There is an old hombre who cooks for the vaqueros. He used to be one of them, a cowboy. I also clean the house and care for El Capitan.
Yes, I got the feeling from talking to him that he's very grateful for your help.
That one would never say such a thing, not to one such as me, a servant.
The conversation was edging into areas where the kid didn't want to go. Other people's emotions were their business. He picked up a fork, poured syrup on the flapjacks, and dug in. The food was excellent. A few minutes later, Carmelita added some bacon onto his plate, and the meal got even better. The kid didn't have to fake a hearty appetite and an appreciation for what he was eating. Diana came into the kitchen, dressed in the same sort of riding outfit she had worn the day before, but gray instead of brown. The kid started to get to his feet, but she waved him back into his chair.
We don't stand on ceremony around here, kid. Carmelita, I'm ready for some of your coffee, and that food smells mighty good.
I wasn't sure as I'd see you up this early.
Diana sat down at the table with him, and Carmelita placed breakfast in front of her.
Rockland said we were riding out after those bushwhackers at first light, didn't he?
Yes, but I didn't know you were going along.
I don't like being shot at any more than you do, kid. And it was worse for me, because I was attacked in my own home. I'm not going to let Malone get away with that.
If we run into trouble, somebody could get hurt trying to watch out for you.
Nobody has to watch out for me, as you put it. I'm perfectly capable of taking care of myself. You've seen with your own eyes that I'm a good shot with a rifle, and I ride as well or better than half the men who work for Diamondback.
All right, but if the bullets start to fly, I'm going to be looking to save my hide before I am yours.
Fine. That's exactly the way I want it.
Even as the kid made the declaration, he knew that probably wasn't the way things would work out. In the event of trouble, his instincts would force him to protect Diana. He wasn't going to admit that to her. By the time they finished breakfast and left the big house, the eastern sky was gray, with a band of orange along the horizon that signaled the approach of dawn. The kid took along his sharps and Winchester. Diana carried her saddle gun, the same carbine she had used to blast the rattlesnake the day before. Sam Rocklin and four other men were in the corral, cutting out their horses from the remuda. Rocklin saw Diana and came over to the corral fence.
Miss Diana, what are you thinking about doing?
I'm coming with you. This is Starboard Range. And one of the starbirds needs to help find out who attacked it.
I know what you're saying, but I ain't sure it's a good idea for you to ride with us. Could be some trouble.
I hope so. That would mean we found the men we're looking for.
I reckon you could look at it like that.
It won't do any good to argue. I own half this ranch, you know.
Yeah, but your uncle calls the shots most of the time, and he leaves most of the decisions up to me.
I'm coming along, and that's final.
All right. We'll get your horse saddled and ready to ride.
I can saddle my own horse.
Yes'm, whatever you want.
Thirty minutes later, the kid, Diana, Rocklin, and the other hands were mounted up and ready in front of the barn. All five of them were armed with pistols and rifles. They would be a formidable little group, able to handle most troubles they were likely to run into. If they encountered a large group of Malone's hired guns, they'd be outnumbered. But the kid figured Rocklin didn't want to take the rest of the crew along and leave Diamondback undefended, especially since they were short-handed.
How's Deuce?
Seems a mite stronger this morning. He was able to sleep some during the night without the pain bothering him too much.
That's good. Aura should be back from Bristol with the doctor sometime today. With any luck, Deuce will pull through.
Yes'm.
Also, with any luck, we'll catch up to the men who shot him. All right, Sam, let's go.
Yes'm. Let's ride!
Starting out, they rode only to the trees where the riflemen had hidden to open fire on the ranch. There, in the orange light that began to flood over the valley, they searched for any signs left behind by the bushwhackers. It didn't take a skilled tracker to see the mounds of droppings and the muddle of tracks that marked the place where someone had held the horses.
I'm making 14 horses, give or take one.
That means if we catch up to them, they'll outnumber us 2-1, Sam.
Yeah, but maybe they ain't all together anymore. Anyway, your father didn't order us to track those bushwhackers down and shoot it out with them. He just wants us to find out where they came from.
Everybody went back to studying the ground under the trees. They found a number of cartridges that had been ejected from Winchesters, as well as the butts of a few Quirlies, but nothing else. Certainly nothing that would positively identify the men who had opened fire on the ranch headquarters. The kids saw where the tracks led away from the trees. The trail ran straight south toward the Severn River. As Rocklin had predicted, when the gunmen fled, they didn't try to cover their tracks. All they'd been interested in was putting some distance between themselves and Diamondback. The riders set out to follow the trail.
Where's Malone's spread located?
Well south of the river, mostly along the hills that border the valley on that side. But one of the ranches he picked up cheap when the owner wanted to sell out was called the Arrowhead because of the way it's shaped. That range comes to a point at the river itself, and the wedge it forms extends across the road. That's why Malone got the idea he could dictate who comes and who goes in the valley. About a quarter mile of the main trail through Rattlesnake Valley cuts through his range.
That won't stand up legally, but I suppose Malone isn't the sort of man who worries too much about things like that, is he?
You got that right, Morgan. Malone don't care about nothing except getting what he wants.
They followed the tracks to the river. There was no ford there, but from the looks of it, the fleeing bushwhackers had put their horses into the water and made the animals swim across.
It ain't far to the ford. It's only about half a mile downstream. We'll cross down yonder, then double back to pick up the trail.
It would save time to swim the horses across here.
Yes'm, it would. But it'd be more dangerous, too.
What would you do if I wasn't along? Would you still go downstream to the ford? Or are you just trying to protect me?
It's not like we're hot on their trail. They came through here more than 12 hours ago. Taking an extra half hour to cross where it's safer won't have any effect on the tracks.
I suppose you're right. But I don't like being coddled.
I think we've all got that idea.
The riders turned and headed downstream along the grassy riverbank. The shots had come from the other side of the river. The kid wheeled his horse and pulled the Winchester from its sheath. He sprayed lead into the trees as fast as he could work the Winchester's lever. The kid's reaction was the swiftest, but as the shots from his rifle rolled out, the other members of the group began to fight back. Even in the middle of the fight, the kid's brain was working. He suspected that the bushwhackers from the night before had left a couple of men behind to see if anyone tried to follow their trail. That was the only explanation that made any sense.
Hold your fire! Hold your fire!
The kid knew why Rocklin issued that order. He hadn't heard any more shots from across the river for several seconds. It was likely that the two men over there had taken a few pot shots, then fled. Unless, of course, the speedy response from the kid and his companions had tagged the bushwhackers. Rocklin waved his men towards some nearby rocks.
Take cover and keep your heads down until I see what's over there. Attend to the fellas who got hit.
The kids saw two men sagging in their saddles. They'd been wounded in the open volley, and while neither man had been knocked off his horse, they could still be seriously injured. As Rockland put his horse into the water, Diana tried to follow him. The kid moved so that his buckskin blocked her.
Get in the rocks with the others. I'll go with Rockland.
Damn it, you can't order me around!
He leaned over in the saddle and jerked her reins out of her hands.
I'll take you in there and make you stay, but if I do that, Rockland may have to face those bushwhackers alone.
Oh, all right, blast it! But I'm not gonna forget this kid.
Word of honor, you'll get behind those rocks?
Word of honor.
The kid nodded and released her reins. He swung the buckskin around and heeled the horse into motion. The buckskin lunged into the river, and in a moment, the water was deep enough so that he had to start swimming. Because he believed the men left behind by the bushwhackers had fled, the kid didn't expect any more shots to come from the trees. But he couldn't keep from steeling his muscles for the impact of a bullet anyway, as he followed Rockland across the river. When they reached the far side of the stream, the horses splashed up the bank. Rockland was in front, but the kid urged the buckskin alongside the ramrod's mount. They rode about 20 feet apart as they entered the trees. The kid guided his horse with his knees and held the Winchester in both hands, ready to fire at a second's notice. His keen eyes searched the sun-dappled shadows under the trees, but saw no signs of movement. The kid and Rockland rode around for several minutes.
They must have lit a shuck. They ain't here no more.
That's what it looks like to me, too.
Rockland dismounted to take a closer look at the ground. The kid followed suit. Rockland found some tracks and pointed at them.
Look here. I recognize the big nick on that horseshoe. It belongs to one of the horses we've been trailing.
Proof that these two bushwhackers were part of the same bunch.
I never doubted that.
Neither did I. But, as Captain Starbird pointed out, it's good to have proof.
The kid used the barrel of his rifle to push aside some brush.
Look at this, Sam.
Rockland leaned over and craned his neck to see what the kid was talking about. He saw the splash of dark red blood on the ground.
Reckon we must have winged one of them scally hooters.
Yes, and from the looks of that blood, it might have been a serious injury. We know we did some damage, anyway.
It ain't enough. It ain't gonna be enough until Malone and his whole crew of gun wolves are dead.
Is that what you want? An all-out war?
Malone called the tune at this here ball. He can damn well dance to it.
The kid couldn't argue with that. The results of a man's actions were on his own head. Trying to make out that a person wasn't responsible for what he or she did in life was just crazy, as far as the kid was concerned. Two sets of hoofprints led away from the trees, headed south. That came as no surprise to the kid. He and Rockland stepped out of the trees onto the bank and waved their rifles over their heads, knowing that the men forded up in the rocks would see them. A moment later, Diana and one of the Diamondback hands emerged from the rocks.
They're gone! Go on down to the ford and meet us there!
Junior Pettigrew's hurt pretty bad. Sam and Ned Bunford's got a bullet hole in his leg.
Can Ned ride?
Yeah, I expect he can.
Put Junior on his horse and Ned can take him back to the ranch.
The cowboy nodded and waved a hand to indicate that he understood. He and Diana disappeared back into the rocks. The kid and Rockland mounted up, but waited on the riverbank until the entire group came in sight again. The two wounded men, riding double, started back toward Diamondback. Diana and the other two punchers followed the north bank of the Severn toward the ford.
There are only five of us now.
Rockland and the kid started along the south bank.
The odds against us if we run into more trouble just got a mite higher. That damn pirate's whittling us down.
That may be exactly what he's trying to do. He knows he can't stand up to your outfit in open combat, so he's going to employ guerrilla tactics against Diamondback.
It ain't no fair way to fight.
That's because men like Malone don't care about being fair. They want to win no matter what the cost.
A few minutes later, the kid and Rockland rendezvoused with Diana and the other two punchers at the ford.
Did you find anything in those trees?
Some blood. Looks like we ventilated one of them.
Good. I hope the bastard bleeds to death. And I don't care how unladylike that is.
Nobody said anything. Come on, let's try to pick up that trail again.
They rode upstream to where the riflemen had hidden for the most recent ambush attack.
Nick, you and Carl follow these two fellas. Miss Starbird and Mr. Morgan and I will pick up that other trail. I'm betting they'll meet up before too long.
Are you sure that splitting such a small force is a good idea, Sam?
The boss wants to know as much as we can tell him about the varmints who attacked the ranch, ma'am. Because of those tracks, I'm convinced the two men who opened fire on us a little while ago were part of the same bunch that attacked Diamondback yesterday evening. But your uncle would want to know for sure.
You're right. We'll split up. But it won't be for long.
That's what I'm thinking. Anyway, we'll still all be within shouting distance of each other. We may not even be out of sight.
That turned out to be the case. but not for the reasons the foreman probably thought. The kid, Diana, and Rockland rode along the river until they came to a spot opposite the place where the men who had raided the ranch put their horses into the stream. There were no tracks on the bank to show where the bushwhackers had emerged.
That ain't good. I know we're in the right place. I took note of that dead limb in that tree over yonder. The trail they left ran right past it.
They didn't swim their horses straight across. They went upstream, or more likely downstream for a ways before they came out of the water. Like you said, Sam, at first, they were just trying to get away. Then they started trying to cover their tracks.
And they'd done a good job of it too, dang it. Why don't we just ride up and down the river until we find where they came out? They couldn't have gone too far.
Might be better to follow those other tracks with Nick and Carl. They're bound to join up with the others sooner or later.
The kid wasn't so sure of that. If Black Terrence Malone was any sort of strategist, he might have ordered the men he left behind not to rejoin the rest of the bunch. In fact, they might have all split up, leaving the river at different spots, one by one, so that their tracks would be easier to conceal. The kid suddenly had a hunch that they wouldn't be able to prove the men who'd attacked Diamondback the previous evening were from Malone's Trident Ranch. He and Diana and Rockland rode back to rejoin Weaver and Adams. Together, they followed the tracks left by the two men who had taken those potshots at them. After a quarter mile, the hoof prints reached the main road through Rattlesnake Valley. It appeared that no one else had used the road that morning, because Rockland was able to tell that the two riders turned east toward the settlement of Bristol.
Looks like they ain't heading for Malone's spread after all.
That doesn't mean anything. They could work for him anyway.
I hate to go back to the ranch and tell your uncle we failed, but I don't see what else we can do. Anyway, I don't want to leave the crew short-handed any longer than we have to. Malone might try something else.
There's one more thing we can do, or rather, that I can do. I'll ride onto the settlement and take a look around. Maybe the man we wounded went looking for the doctor, and I can get a line on him that way.
Maybe. But Doc Eggers ought to be well on his way out to Diamondback by now to have a look at Deuce.
The wounded man wouldn't know that.
I think it's a good idea. I'm coming with you, kid.
No.
What do you mean, no? Don't you know by now that you can't tell me what to do?
I'm saying it wouldn't be a smart thing to do. Malone may have his suspicions that I've thrown in with you, but he can't be sure of that. Most of the people in town won't have any idea who I am. If you and I ride in together, everyone in Bristol will know that I'm connected to your ranch. It's liable to make it harder for me to find out anything. Didn't your uncle say that the citizens weren't as sympathetic to Diamondback as they used to be?
That's right. The ones who've been there the longest seem to have forgotten how much my father did for this valley. And the people who've arrived more recently don't know and don't care. There are times when I think that progress and civilization aren't always such good things.
The kid didn't say anything, but he agreed with her on that score, even though for most of his life he had been a blatant representative of civilization's steady march across the West.
All right. I understand what you're getting at, kid. I'll go back to the ranch with Sam and the others. Just be careful. Malone could have spies in town.
I'm always careful.
It was easy to find the settlement. All he had to do was follow the road. By midday, he rounded a bend in the trail as it curved around a hill and saw Bristol laid out before him. At first glance, it appeared to be a typical West Texas cow town, with false-fronted businesses along both sides of a main street that stretched for several blocks, and a mixture of frame and adobe residences on the cross streets. But a closer look revealed that there were a number of more substantial buildings, too, including a two-story red brick structure. The kid wouldn't be surprised if it housed the local bank, along with maybe some lawyers' offices and things like that. As he rode closer, he saw that a few of the frame buildings had actual second stories, not just false fronts. One of them spotted a large, colorful sign, and as the kid rode closer, he was able to make out the words, Rattler's Den Saloon. Morgan saw that the sign had a drawing of a rattlesnake coiled and ready to strike as he entered the main street on the buckskin. The hitch rails in front of the saloon were full, and there were a lot of horses and wagons tied up in other places along the street. Sam Rockland had pointed out that one of the men who shot at them earlier was riding a mount with a large nick out of the horseshoe on its front left hoof. The kid couldn't pick that particular print out of a welter of hoof prints in the street, though, so short of going along and checking the shoes on every horse he came to, he didn't see how that knowledge was going to help him. He couldn't very well do that if he wanted to blend in. He angled the buckskin toward the Rattler's Den, thinking that the biggest, busiest saloon in town was usually a good place to pick up information. The kid swung down from the saddle and found a place at the crowded hitch rail to loop the reins. A plank porch ran in front of the saloon, which took up more than half a block. A saddle maker's shop had the rest of the frontage on Main Street in the block. The kid stepped onto the porch and started toward the bat wings. They swung out suddenly, just before he reached them, and he stepped back quickly to avoid being hit by them. Two men pushed onto the boardwalk. They stopped short at the sight of the kid.
Watch where you're going, mister.
I was. That's why I was able to keep the two of you from running into me.
He's got a smart mouth on him, Breck. You reckon we ought to teach him some manners?
No, he's just some damn stupid dude, Early. We ain't got time to fool with him.
He started past the kid, who stood his ground and didn't get out of the way. Breck's shoulder rammed hard into his.
What the hell? Did you see what he done?
Yeah, I saw. Stranger, you looking for trouble?
I never go looking for trouble, but I don't back down from it.
Seems to me like you're craving it, and we're just the hombres to give it to you.
The kid wondered if these two men were the ones who had shot at him and Diana and the others earlier in the day. They might have spotted him through one of the saloon's front windows and recognized him, then staged the confrontation so they would have an excuse for killing him. Both men sported six guns and tied down holsters. If they made a play, the kid figured he would have to kill both of them. There wouldn't be time for anything fancy. But he didn't particularly want them dead, in case there was anything he could learn from them.
I think you're the one who's hunting trouble, mister.
The kid brought his left fist up with blinding speed and slammed a punch right onto the man's beak-like nose. The impact sent the man flying backward to crash into the wall of the saloon.
Hey!
The other man lunged at the kid, swinging a big fist in a roundhouse blow. The kid ducked under the sweeping punch and bored in, hooking a hard right and then a left into Early's midsection. Foul, whiskey-laden breath gusted out of Early's mouth as he doubled over in pain. That put him in position for the uppercut that might have finished him off if the kid had gotten a chance to throw it. Instead, Breck, who had recovered his balance without falling, launched himself at the kid in a diving tackle.
Yeah!
Both men fell off the porch and onto the street. The kid hit the dirt first, with Breck landing heavily on top of it.
Let me at him, Breck! I'll stomp the hell out of him!
All right, get the hell away from him or the next one goes in your head, Breck. Same goes for you, Early. Stay back.
You better put that gun down, Sophia. It's liable to go off.
It'll go off, all right. It'll splatter your brains all over the street.
Breck pushed himself off the kid. He got to his feet and stepped back.
I don't take kindly to being threatened, especially by a woman.
Yeah. You can't tell us what to do, Sophia. You ain't our boss.
Yes, well, if I was desperate enough to hire troublemaking oafs like the two of you, I wouldn't be much of a businesswoman now, would I?
The two men frowned, not having a comeback for that. The kid rolled onto his side. He grabbed his hat out of the dusty street as he came to his feet. The woman who stood on the porch held a Colt Navy revolver in her right hand and steadied her grip with her left hand on that wrist. The gun didn't waver a bit as she pointed it at Breck and Early. She was a real beauty, the kid saw, despite the rather garish getup she wore. A large purple plume of some sort stuck up from the bun of rich brown hair gathered at the back of her head. She wore a purple gown that left her arms and much of her shoulders bare. A couple of thin straps held it up. The neck was cut low enough to reveal the swell of her rounded breasts, and the waist nipped in before flaring out to emphasize the curve of her hips. The outfit was tight enough and revealing enough that the kid wondered where she kept the Colt.
You two have had your fun. Go on wherever you were headed when you left. I don't want to see you back here for at least a week.
Damn it, Sophia, you can't do that. You got the best liquor in the valley.
That's right. Maybe if you get thirsty enough, you boys will remember not to start another brawl in front of my place. Look at that railing. Tell your boss I'll send him the bill after I have it repaired.
Malone ain't gonna like that.
I don't give a damn what Black Terrence Malone likes or doesn't like. You boys tell him what I said. Now get out of here!
Scowling, the two men turned toward the hitch rack. The beautiful Sophia had confirmed the kid's hunch. Breck and Early worked for Malone, and he was more convinced than ever that they were the bushwhackers from the river, even though neither of them appeared to be wounded. They jerked the reins of their horses loose and swung up into their saddles. The kid wanted to get a look at the hoof prints their horses left. If one of them sported a nick in the shoe, that was the last bit of proof he'd need.
Stay back, stranger. Don't go starting up that fight again after I already saved your bacon once.
Don't worry. I'm not starting anything.
The kid brushed dust from his hat and clapped it on his head, and as he did, Breck and Early turned their horses and rode off at a gallop, causing dust to twirl in the air behind him. That didn't keep the kid from checking out the hoof prints. His forehead creased. Neither horse left the sort of print he was looking for. Well, that didn't have to mean anything, he told himself. The bushwhackers could still be Malone's men. They might be in the saloon at that very minute. They could have spotted him and sent Brecken Early out to kill him under the guise of a brawl that got out of hand. Or maybe Breck and Early were really just a couple of troublemaking oafs, as Sophia had called them. The kid couldn't be sure. Either way, they might have killed him if the woman hadn't stepped in. He smiled at her as he stepped onto the boardwalk.
I'm much obliged to you for your help. I think I could have handled those two, but it would have been quite a chore.
She lowered the colt.
A skinny hombre like you? They would have busted you to pieces, mister.
Can I buy you a drink to show my gratitude?
You don't have to buy me a drink. I own the place.
Then I'll buy one for the house and increase your profits.
I never refuse to take cash from a paying customer. Come on in, Mr.
Morgan.
Sophia pushed the bat wings aside.
Drinks all around, Fergus, on Mr. Morgan here.